this afternoon I'm in Hove, not Brighton, with the Reverend Canon Douglas Holt, who has been here for a little while, but I know from Bristol. So how and where did we first meet?
That would have been back in Bristol Diocese, maybe at a training event, or when I came over to Box, or you rang up and said, I'm going to commit suicide, can you help?
I didn't actually do that. I did phone you up and say, Douglas, I want to take you out to lunch because there's something I need to talk to you about.
You're right, and I can remember the issue. And it wasn't suicide. Honest.
No, I just thought you might have a sensible opinion. Which is really, it was very, very helpful, I have to admit, our discussion at that point. But I must have met you at some training thing before then to have thought, I know I'll ask Douglas. I've got a problem I can't solve. So next question is about tea. Do you drink tea?
Lots, yes.
And what's your favourite sort of tea?
Well, I have to say it's PG Tips. I do have the other specialist teas, herb teas from time to time, and Earl Grey and Lady Grey and all that kind of stuff, but I always come back to the ordinary bog standard PG Tips.
So the question I'm asking everybody is, how do you respond to the statement, Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
I think I don't want to use the terms dying or sleeping. That was my first response. What I want to say is, what is the Spirit doing in and through the church? And my answer to that question, which may or may not give you an answer to your question, is that it feels to me like the Spirit has withdrawn rather a lot from the West, from Western culture over the last half a century, maybe more. And that in very broad and general terms, I would want to say that the culture of this country and of most of the West is infinitely less aware of its Christian inheritance than it was, say, 50 years ago or 100 years ago, maybe. And so in that situation, the church, I feel, is struggling. I feel it's not recognising what is happening and doesn't quite know how to respond. We're weakened somehow. And I see that as a very broad and generalised statement. I don't know if that does answer your question or not, or you want to come back.
The reason I'm asking this question is from our own experience, because I read that statement in a magazine article, a newspaper article, it's in the Telegraph, and I didn't know what I thought about it. And normally when I read something in that way, I agree or disagree. Yes. I wasn't sure.
Yes.
Partly because the evidence in our own parish is very contradictory. Mm-hmm. So Sunday mornings in particular, are an almost intractable problem.
Oh, really?
For my context. Mm-hmm. But we have more and more people coming to the things on the other days of the week.
Uh-huh.
So in Killearn,
yes,
this year, we had more attendances at normal church activities, so regular church activities, not on a Sunday than on a Sunday last year.
Oh, interesting.
And that fits in with a lot of people who are telling me that the Christendom model is no use anymore.
Yes, yes.
And in Box, because some of our fresh expressions take place on a Sunday afternoon, the figures are not as clear cut, but certainly our Sunday morning worship figures are outnumbered by our Sunday afternoons and our weekday.
And other, yeah, understand, yeah.
So that doesn't seem to be necessarily dying or sleeping, but changing.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
And we still have a lot of people who come at Christmas and Easter.
Right.
Christmas in particular.
Yes.
So when I say a lot, there's that kind of, we normally hit 30% of our population will come to something in church in the month up to Christmas and including Christmas, which is a huge fringe.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what people's motivations are.
Yes, yes.
I don't know. So that's the kind of...
Yes.
That's part of the questing about why is this important to us?
Mm.
What do we think about it? Mm. So I have some special questions for you.
Oh!
Although the first one I did ask Richard Clutterbuck, but right. I was interested in your opinion as well. So how could the Church of England understand and collaborate with the church in the whole of the UK more productively?
Become disestablished.
You say that and a bit of me goes, yay, and a bit of me goes, no, because I like our special position.
Yes, yep. I do too. I mean, we all benefit from it. And you and I will both get a pension. And that's all set up through a whole institutional framework which includes our position as the state church. But it seems to me that everybody else regards us as different, somehow special. That may be a good special or a bad special. We have inherited... positions which suggest an awful lot more influence or power or whatever opportunities for the sharing of the gospel than are real. I'll give you an example. This year, on our walk of witness on Good Friday, we walk straight along one particular road which goes past our church and keep going. And it takes about three quarters of an hour, and we stop at various stages. Very similar to many places around the country, I imagine. This year, the heavens opened utterly, utterly, totally. So by the time we got to the second station in the square, at one corner of which is our church, St. John the Baptist, I suggested, I had no part in organising this year in particular, so I felt free to offer that we give up on the stations along the way until we got to them and simply came into St. John the Baptist Church, had the other stations, as it were, there as moments of reflection and prayer and so on, and then when that was done, put on our coats and hats, go back out and scuttle along as quickly as we could to the end. Fine. Why do I tell the story? It looked suddenly as if St. John the Baptist was terribly important because it had 150 people in it of all different faiths, not all different faiths, all different denominations, and maybe a few of other faiths as well. But the reality of St. John is that it is not a hugely significant or important place. People see it and they know it's there and all of that. But out of the 5,000-6,000 people who live in this parish, we have on a Sunday, a good Sunday with both services added together, would come up to 90. A normal Sunday would be about 60. And you can work out what percentage that is of 6,000. And our congregational numbers put us in the top half of Chichester Diocese. We are more numerous than half the churches in the diocese. I don't call that having much influence. We're too small to have much influence in a parish this big. But the building is there still. And people notice it and they see it and they talk about the flower stand with the church attached.
Mm. That's it's interesting, and I a bit of me wonders whether disestablishing the church would help financially, and people actually thinking, I want this to continue, yes, therefore I will financially support it.
Yes.
Whereas trying to explain to people that we don't have lots of money is really hard.
Yes.
When I end up having arguments with people saying, that's fine, you think we've got resources, who am I going to sell the church building to?
Yes.
Who is going to buy it? That's our main resource.
Yes. Yep. Yep. I know. I know.
Yeah.
It's a fraught issue, and I think our Anglican position in the country is very misleading, precisely because of the buildings. They suggest a great deal of influence on people's lives, and that's not nothing. It's not negative. In many instances, people like there to be a church that they don't go to.
I think that's particularly true in rural settings, like ours.
Yes, yes. Mm. But it's not good enough. Mm. It's not good enough. You know, that we have big and, or small, big, interesting buildings that people recognise as churches is hardly the gospel of Jesus Christ.
No, I'm editing the interview that I managed to do on Friday night with Jeremy Vine, and he has an odd ecclesiology in it. So but quite focused on buildings, which was because we were in Gloucester Cathedral, so it's kind of
right.
Like it was a bit overawed by the cathedral.
I look at it from this point of view, Janet. If you could, per impossibile, if you could grab some members of the early church, say in the first 2 centuries of the Christian church, so you're going back a long time, but if you could grab them and time travel them up to and talk to them and explain to them what we were doing today and all the buildings that we have and St. Paul's Cathedral and bishops and, you know, da da da. They said, no, that's not what the church is. No, that can't be the church. You're talking about something different.
And that takes us back to the question about whether Augustine was a good or a bad thing for the church, doesn't it?
Well, indeed it does.
I had to write an essay on that once. Mm. So, question number 2 is about evangelicalism and Anglo-Catholicism. So, recently, I found some friends who had strong, committed evangelical Christian faith in the late 1980s have left church.
Yes.
But an Anglo-Catholic friend of mine talks about keeping on going to church, whatever the state of his personal belief.
Yep.
And I've been wondering if an emphasis on personal conversionism has encouraged or perhaps even compels those with doubt to leave the church. And I wondered what you thought.
Yes. I come from an evangelical background, but I've always been terribly worried about evangelicalism. So much so that I've never been a part of any grouping or party or anything like that, so that I could be put into the evangelical box. That always worried me and still does. I think the way I talk about faith and different dimensions of faith is like this. I don't want to talk about individual soul salvation, which evangelicals are terribly concerned about, nor do I want to talk about the structures of evil and manipulation and exclusion and how much they need the gospel separately. I want to see a series of circles, concentric circles, one of which at the centre is the individual. Not at the centre because the individual is all important, but at the centre because the individual is small and one only, so it's the smallest circle of the good news. And you build out from that, and there is a gospel for that individual, There's a gospel for a family, there is a gospel, there's good news for all the different levels of all the different structures that we have built. There's good news for a city, or there can be. There can be good news for a nation. And there is good news for the world as a whole. I was explaining the other day to someone that John 3:16, where it says, God so loved the world, in Greek it's ton kosmon. And ton kosmon means everything, the cosmos. It does not mean all the individual people in the world. It includes all the individual people in the world, but it means an awful lot more than that. The world is loved by God and will be redeemed, is being redeemed by him. That's hugely more than all the individual people in the world. Read Isaiah about the ships of Tarshish coming across the Mediterranean, all their riches coming to Jerusalem. Tarshish was arguably no place at all, but was a term for the place that's furthest away that you can imagine. They're not quite sure, but anywhere and everywhere. All the different structures that exist, the different cultures, the different languages, the different ways in which people have been able to live together. There's good news for all of those different levels or structures within the created order. So to emphasize individual soul salvation is not to preach, in my view, the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's to preach one part of it, one element, one dimension of it. To preach, on the other hand, disciplined, committed church-going, irrespective of what you think or feel, is to refer to something important about the way things are in the world and about what God wants from us. But maybe it's missing out a dimension of emotionality or even more theological thinking that are there and are open to people, if only they take the time to do it. Most of the people who float out through the back door, are they all evangelicals?
I think for me, I have people that I've been getting back in touch with who come from that really strong evangelical culture.
Yep.
So it's my experience that actually these are people that I would never have thought would leave.
All right, okay, yeah.
And yet they are, I think some of them feel compelled to leave because they're having doubts.
Yes. I would love to talk to some of these people. I'd love to sit down for an evening, open a decent bottle of wine and just hear what they have to say. What is it that drives them out? What are they hating so much? What are they upset about? What are they angry about? What undermines them? What really doesn't help them so much that they want to take themselves off?
And I'm not sure if it's one thing.
No.
Or if it's for each individual, if it's a different thing.
Yes.
And that's part of the project, I guess. So that's turned into part of the project I wasn't necessarily expecting.
Yes, yes.
Next question. If you could change one thing about the Church of England, what would it be?
its position as the established church.
So we've covered that. That is quite simple. Well, not simple at all. It is a simple thought. Difficult to achieve.
Absolutely. Recognise that.
So, final question for the interview is, what's your favourite thing beginning with T?
I think, am I allowed two?
You can try. Strictly only one must be your favourite.
Well, 1A and 1B.
1A and 1B.
1A at the sort of at an intellectual level is theology. I'm still very keen on theology. No, I don't mean by that all theology. I don't sit down and read theology all the time, But I think there's an enormous amount of work to be done by theologians, and I mean academic professional theologians, and by all of us as church members, as theologians. I think it's terribly neglected. I think it's very sad. Secondly, travel. I love going around and seeing places that I've not seen before. By this, I don't mean exotic venues where you go off to Vietnam and spend a great deal of money and you're there for 2 weeks and then home again. That's good if you can do it. But yesterday, we have some friends from Jamaica staying, and Anne and I took a day off and we went with Ingrid and Courtney. We drove from here to Rye, along the coast, past Beachy Head, where every day the chaplains have between 1 and 4 cases to deal with of those who are threatening to commit suicide. Fascinating. Sad?
Mm.
Fascinating. Beautiful place. If you don't know Beachy Head, go some. Beautiful.
Oh,
yeah. And then on we went along to Rye, where Anne and I spent the first 2 nights of our honeymoon, 43 years ago, believe it or not. We didn't, but we've worked it out now. And it was lovely to see Rye's a pretty little town. Mm. And then we came back a different route, sort of through the centre of Sussex, not along the coast. And although I don't think Sussex is wonderful all the time, it is incredibly beautiful. The South Downs, and all these rolling hills, and our friends from Jamaica just loved it. So that level of travel where you see something that you haven't seen before, maybe quite near home, you just happen to be there, and you think, gosh, isn't that interesting, isn't that beautiful, isn't that strange the way those buildings are put, or isn't that hill lovely. Travel, seeing things that aren't home.
I'm going to say thank you very much for having me in Hove this afternoon, Douglas.
Pleasure. Come again.